And over that time period, that constant exposure leads to your body's immune system changing.
Hello, and welcome to HIMSCast. I'm Susan Morse, Executive Editor of Healthcare Finance News. We're speaking today with Dr. Shyam Joshi, who is Chief Scientific Officer at Nektar Allergy Center in New York City. Welcome, Shyam.
Thank you so much for having me.
First, can you please tell us about Nektar Allergy Center and what you do there?
Absolutely. So Nektar Allergy is both a online direct-to-consumer as well as a physical clinic located in Manhattan, New York City. And so our goal is to provide a comprehensive allergy care for patients and really bring new and novel therapies to the market that are available elsewhere in the world, but really not targeted here in the US. And so our goal is to have people live with allergies in a safe and exciting way instead of dealing with and suffering from it all the time.
And many people do suffer from it. I've read 80 million Americans. Is that the right number?
Yeah, there are several allergic conditions, right? And so the most common being hay fever, environmental allergies. And yeah, up to 40% of the US has environmental allergies. And while some people consider it mild, some people more severe, it affects our day-to-day life. It affects our productivity at work. For children, it affects how well they do in school. And so it's actually, if you look at certain estimates, environmental allergies is the most costly condition in the US because of all of the indirect costs associated with it, including missed work, missed school, lack of productivity during peak allergy season, hospitalizations, ER visits. There's a lot of indirect costs associated with allergies.
Does that include drugs? Do most people, are they on prescriptions or over the counter or both?
Both. I think for especially asthma, when you think of asthma, which falls under this kind of allergy umbrella, the biggest cost for the healthcare system for patients with asthma is medications, is the medications themselves, not the ER visits, not the hospitalizations, not the office visits. It's really just the cost of the drugs.
Yes. And as someone who has mild asthma, I can sympathize with that empathize for about the cost of the, obviously a lot of people have insurance to cover these things. But what's the difference between asthma and allergies? You said it falls under the same umbrella.
Yeah. So there's a term that we use in the healthcare field called ATP or atopic disease. And this involves four or five different conditions that have a very similar inflammatory pattern in the body. And these include environmental allergies, asthma, food allergies, and eczema. And while they're not the exact same type of condition, they all are similar when we look at it and how the body's responding to this. And so allergies and asthma are two different things, but allergies can make asthma worse. And having asthma can make allergic reactions worse. And so often patients that have one have the other, and when they work together, it can be quite a bit more problematic for patients.
Is it important at Nektar Allergy Center that you have to differentiate between what a person has, or does it not matter because they have to be treated either way?
It matters because the way we approach patients is different. So if they have purely environmental allergies, we can address that. But if they have allergies and asthma, we have to address both of those. And luckily, there are some treatments that you can do that improves both of them at the same time. So one specifically is allergen immunotherapy, which is where we desensitize patients to what they're allergic to. And by removing those allergy triggers, not only do their environmental allergies like the sneezing, the itchy watery eyes, the grogginess that you get during peak pollen season gets better, but also it significantly improves asthma. And there's actually some studies that have shown in children, If you start them on, if they're allergic and you start them on immunotherapy at a young age, you can actually prevent asthma from ever developing in the child, which is the holy grail in medicine, right? If you can prevent a disease and all the downstream ramifications, the costs that are associated with treating this condition that can be lifelong, there's something you can do that can prevent it. That is the ideal situation. And so immunotherapy at an early age can do that.
And what is immunotherapy, please?
Thank you for asking. So, immunotherapy is our term for desensitization to what you're allergic to. And that can be done in several different ways. The tried and true method that's been around for over 100 years now are allergy shots. And so that's when you get testing done to determine what you're allergic to. And then your allergist or ENT provider, they can provide a very specific formula of things that you're allergic to and then expose you to those things over time in a safe and consistent manner. And so those require going into the office, getting these injections, sometimes once, or in some places do it twice or even three times a week to slowly build up the dose. You can't start at the full dose, the therapeutic dose right off the bat. Otherwise, you're going to have anaphylaxis because we're literally injecting you with stuff that you're allergic to. So you have to start slow and steady and work your way up till you get to a full therapeutic dose. And then once, usually about once a month, you continue to get the injections for several years. The general recommendation by most of the national societies is doing this for at least 3 to 5 years. And over that time period, that constant exposure leads to your body's immune system changing so that when it gets exposed to the things in the environment that it was previously allergic to, the body's like, I don't really care anymore. And it's not going to produce that allergic response that they had before, which can be the sneezing, which can be the itchy, watery eyes, it could be the congestion, it could be the asthma symptoms. So allergy shots is kind of what's traditionally been done. What we're doing at Nektar and what's being done across the world is sublingual immunotherapy. And in when you look at Europe, 70% of the immunotherapy that's happening in Europe right now is sublingual immunotherapy. It's not allergy shots anymore because it's generally considered safer, equally as effective, and much more convenient for patients.
What is that? Yeah.
So it's the same concept as allergy shots, except that you're getting exposed under the tongue. So sublingual under tongue. And it's administered daily. And over time, you get that same benefit that you do with allergy shots. But again, it's much safer. The risk of an adverse reaction is much less. It's convenient because you don't have to drive to the allergist office. You don't have to drive to the ENT's office to get the shots. Because it's so safe, you can do it at home. And day after day, that same process happens where your immune system changes and the target range is the same. It's still 3 to 5 years, same as allergy shots, but just more convenient.
That's fascinating. Is it, did you say that is also a shot or is that a pill form or
It's a
something
liquid.
else?
It comes from a little pump bottle that you
Yeah.
just pump it and drops come out under the tongue and it gets absorbed into the through the immune system that way and gets the same long-term benefit.
You said it's available in Europe. Is it becoming available in the United States? Has it got FDA approval or does it need it?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So it's a complicated story here, unfortunately. The reason why it's happening much more quickly in Europe is because of the centralized healthcare system. And because it's cheaper, it's more convenient, people are moving to it faster. In the US, the problem is allergy shots are reimbursed at a pretty good rate. And so people who are the gatekeepers here, the allergists, the ENTs, are generally going to stick with allergy shots because there's better reimbursement there overall. And I'm not saying everybody should be on sublingual immunotherapy. There are some patients that would do better on allergy shots, and there's some people that are going to do better on sublingual immunotherapy. But that's a big barrier in terms of insurance reimbursement. But there are some sublingual tablets that are FDA approved. They're quite expensive, but they are FDA approved, but they're only for specific pollens. They're for grass pollen, ragweed pollen. Then there's also one for dust mites. But if you're allergic to anything outside of that, there isn't an FDA approved product in the US market. And so what we're doing at Nectar and some other places are doing as well is we're using the same extract that we do allergy shots with, which we know is good. And we're using that at a much higher concentration and putting it under the tongue, which would provide that same benefit. And that's how they're doing it in Europe most of the time. They're using the liquid most of the time. And so we're bringing that same model over here that's been shown to be effective and doing it in a way that's cost effective for our patients and more convenient for our patients.
And I imagine most patients would rather have liquid than a shot any day.
Yeah, you're going to see both. You're going to see both because some patients really appreciate the convenience of being able to do the drops wherever they are, especially if they travel. If they travel for work often, then having that capability is really important for them. But there are some people that just choose, would prefer to come in, get it administered, wait the 30 minutes that they need to be observed for, and go home. So this is really a conversation that every patient should have with their provider and be given all the options and choose what's best for them.
I think this is a good time to talk about, you were talking about the common allergens. What do you see as the most common? When I think of allergies, I think of the springtime and the flowers. And is are there surprises you can tell us that, maybe most people don't know about?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. In general, the springtime, early summer is peak pollination season across the US, but it's different from different parts of the US as well. So in the South, it typically starts in February, March. As you go further north, you're going to have more peak pollen in March, April, May, all the way into May. But there are some outliers, which I think are really interesting. So in Texas, there's a phenomenon called cedar fever. And that's when mountain cedar pollinates, and it pollinates after the first frost. So it's in December, January time where you get this huge pollination amounts from mountain cedars. And it's really problematic in kind of central Texas, Austin, San Antonio. And patients are very miserable during that time, which is not a typical time you think of pollination season elsewhere in the country. There's also certain times in the fall is ragweed season. And so ragweed is one of the major allergens across the US. And it's generally late summer, fall. And so a lot of patients suffer at that time of the year as well.
I think of it as it's uncomfortable. You sneeze, you have watery eyes, but not life-threatening. And yet you have statistics about ER visits that this can get serious. Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah. So really the patients that are most likely to end up in the emergency room, urgent care, be hospitalized from environmental allergies are those with asthma. And so if their asthma is triggered by allergies, we see this significant increase in ER visits in the springtime when allergies are most prominent. And if you look across the entire spectrum of ER visits, about 1 to 1.5% of all ER visits are for asthma, and a significant portion of those are due to environmental allergen triggered asthma.
Can you say that number again? Did you say 1 in 7
No,
ER?
1 to 1.5%
1.5%. Thank you.
of all ER visits are due to asthma.
Wow.
And so that's close to 2 million ER visits a year that are, again, just for asthma. And it's much more common in children, too. So children are much more likely to go to the hospital for asthma compared to adults. And in addition to that, so we've been talking about mainly environmental allergies and asthma, but you have this whole other category of allergic disease that we haven't really touched on, including food allergies and venom allergies. So it's like bee stings, wasp stings. Which can cause full-blown anaphylaxis, which can be life-threatening, right? Anaphylaxis is oftentimes hives, wheezing or difficulty breathing, swelling of the throat or lips or mouth, GI symptoms, nausea, vomiting, or even cardiovascular collapse, which can obviously be life-threatening. And anaphylaxis is increasing. So over the past 2 decades, the number of ER visits that have happened due to anaphylaxis has increased between 2 to 3 fold. So
Why is
something,
that? What's going on?
I think it's a few things. One, I think we're recognizing it more and that people are identifying, hey, this is a life-threatening issue, and they're actually coming to the emergency room because we're doing a better job of getting that information out there. But I also think allergies are increasing. There are a lot of things that have happened over the past few decades or past half century that are likely contributing to an increased risk of allergies. One of that is climate change. When we have more CO2 in the environment, when we have warmer temperatures overall, that has shown to correlate with a longer and more severe pollination season. A lot of these
Yes, I never
plants,
thought of that.
a lot of
That's
these
climate
plants
change.
love CO2. And so when you have more CO2 in the air, the amount of pollen they produce actually significantly increases. And we have longer, warmer seasons. So pollen season's starting days or even weeks earlier than it used to, and it's staying around days or even weeks longer than it used to. So we just have this increase in allergen exposure through climate change.
Do that. I have to ask you something because when I hear people say, well, I don't remember anybody having a peanut butter allergy when I was a kid. And they said, it's because we're too clean. Everything's too sterile. They're not with farm animals. They're not getting exposed to this and that. Can you please either confirm or debunk, these these rumors that are out there?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So it is partially true. We've changed this from the clean hypothesis or the hygiene hypothesis to more of a microbiome hypothesis. And what I mean by that is when you do have exposure to things that are, I wouldn't say dirty, but more natural in the world, it does affect your microbiome, and even from a very young age through adulthood. And we are understanding more and more that there are certain changes in the microbiome that are associated with higher risk for atopic conditions. So that's asthma, allergies, eczema. And while we haven't been able to exactly pinpoint which bacteria are important in the microbiome and which ones aren't, we do know that certain exposures throughout life does affect that balance. There was a really cool study that came out probably almost a decade ago now that they looked at the Amish and the Mennonite populations. And they found that those in the Amish population that live with their farm animals, they don't use technology, that their rate for developing asthma was significantly less than the Mennonites who have a similar lifestyle, but they do use a lot more technology. They do have a more quote unquote clean area that they live in. And so just having that exposure, like you said, to farm animals and to things that are more less clean all the time probably does give us some safety against developing asthma and other atopic conditions.
Interesting. This has been a fantastic conversation, and we're out of time, but I need to ask, what's the future? What do you see? What are you excited about?
I think there's, for asthma specifically, the last 15 years have been a huge step forward in terms of asthma management. We have all these fantastic biologic medications, which has completely revolutionized the way that we treat asthma and is allowing us to help keep patients out of the emergency room, out of the hospital, without having to use steroids and prednisone, which have tons of side effects. So I think that trajectory is really promising, and I foresee us having more and more options for severe asthma care. In the terms of in allergy specifically, immunotherapy is going to be the future for the next 15, 20 years. And that's desensitizing patients to environmental allergies. We're doing it now for foods. So for kids who are allergic to foods, we can desensitize them to foods and increase their threshold of reactivity. So they may not react at 1/10 of a peanut. It may take them 5 or 10 peanuts to react, which gives them a lot of protection. So I think this is a great time to be in the allergy world. We're finding a lot of new treatments that we didn't have any time before this.
Dr. Josie, thank you so much for joining us on HIMSS Cast. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really had a great time.